Hey everyone, welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And it is nice to be back. It's either been an eventful week or an uneventful week, depending on your point of view. So the thing, unless you've been living under a rock, you probably realized there was a minor celestial event earlier this week on Monday. That being a total solar eclipse through a big chunk of North America, including the U.S., and you went somewhere to see it.
Yep.
And so we'll talk a little bit about what we did. But before we get into those and some tips and tricks, a couple of other things we'll just briefly announce. Just the other day, there was our new update to Topaz Photo AI. It's now moved to version 3.0. This is something that we haven't played with much, but it's there. It does offer some different functionality. I haven't messed with it yet. It's too early. But if you're on the maintenance plan, it's free. So you don't need to pay for this.
In fact, I upgraded to it and didn't even realize that I had upgraded to 3.0. I just thought I had done a 2. Whatever update.
Yeah, so if you launch Topaz Photo AI and you click the little, there's an update available, and you click it, it'll just update right there. There's no different downloader, installer, or whatever to run. It just does its thing. So that's cool. And it takes some of the tools that were in beta form in the 2.0 versions and makes them, full featured functions.
Which are, like a brightness tweaking setting, and same with color balance.
Sure.
Which, is not a bad thing. Sometimes you realize at the last minute that the way that you had, done your raw conversion was just slightly off, and you'd want something a little bit different. This just keeps you from having to restart the process. So that's not a bad thing.
Nope. We'll take a look at that. I'll be using it. I'll be going down to Florida this week for my birding workshop.
Very good tool for that kind of photography.
Very good for getting rid of some motion blur or just slightly soft images, where the focus just, where things are moving quickly. And the other great thing about this trip is it'll be my first, it'll be a really good chance for me to get in with the OM-1 Mark II and dial in certain settings, especially things for focus and frame rates and things like that. So I'm looking forward to getting the time to actually use real bird subjects instead of pictures on the wall. That's always a good thing. And, even though I'm leading the workshop, we talk about this before. When you go to a setting at a workshop like this, where you're going back to the same place or same places multiple times, you not only get used to what the wildlife is doing, but you can go back and refine your settings the next day and see what does and doesn't work. And so things that you set up in your camera thinking, well, this makes sense, this might be a good idea on paper, you might find out that it doesn't work for you and really there was a better setting. And that's what I plan to do with the Mark II. There's settings in the autofocus that I think are going to be better, but I want to see how it actually behaves.
Right.
So that's
I think there will be at least some things that definitely will work better.
Yeah, I've got a short list of like three or four things that we actually talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
Which, in my opinion, are, I hate to use the word game changer, but if you're an OM shooter and want to shoot birds or wildlife or whatever, the improvements to the autofocus are tremendously worth having, tremendously worthwhile. Okay. That being said, there was a minor firmware update released the other day, just on the 12th, for both the OM-1 and the OM-1 Mark II. This is a bug fix release. So there's not really any new features in there other than some Wi-Fi security settings. You discovered the hard way that if you're going to make this update, there's a certain way to do it. Because, what is it about camera companies? They are not software companies.
Nope.
And it is just, none of them are great. Some of them are worse than others. So what you discovered is that this firmware update will delete all of your in-camera stored settings. It does this.
Which is not uncommon.
No. It then will prompt you to reload those settings after the firmware update is complete. However, if you try to do this via the app, connected via Wi-Fi, the Bluetooth connection gets disabled, and it just, you can end up in a mess.
It can't find the camera
right
after it's updated it in order to restore the settings.
So there probably is a way to do this, but your recommendation, which is what I did, was just to use the OM Workspace desktop application, connect my camera to the computer, and then it runs through everything via USB cable, and you don't have this problem.
If you do it with the app, what you need to do is, for one, make sure that you've backed up all your settings, all of them.
Yeah, onto your phone.
To the app.
Yep.
And then when it completes its process, it'll get to a point where it just kind of falls apart, and you'll see a screen that prompts you for the language, time, all that kind of stuff. You can do that, but the key thing is you have to go into a menu and turn on Bluetooth again, because then the app will see the camera.
Right.
Then you can manually restore those settings.
Okay. Yes.
Not via the update process, but a manual restore. And I fortunately had those backed up.
Which actually is not that hard to do on that app. You know, that's one of the better features of the app. The annoying feature of the app is that it doesn't provide for easy camera model switching. So you literally have to repair every camera every time. So if you have an OM1 and a Mark II, those are different cameras, and you can only have one paired to your app at a time. And I'll contrast that with SnapBridge, which when it first came out, we hated, but it actually has a nice way of storing multiple cameras, and you just say, I'm switching to the other one.
I'll broaden it out. Every other app.
Okay. I've only used the two. Yeah, that's
the only one.
I like the OM app a lot.
That's great, except for
but that feature needs to get fixed. That one is the thing that is my fundamental flaw with it. But anyway,
so let's get into our main topic.
Yeah,
which will be a little bit about the solar eclipse, and then I'll talk a little bit about a little experiment I did with a Nikon ZF for a couple of weeks, trying out a few things.
So yeah, that's cool. So obviously, let's talk about the eclipse, because that was the big news this week. And if you, like I said, unless you've been hiding under a rock, you've seen, been inundated with photos of the eclipse in various forms. And we didn't talk about this last week because we weren't really planning on any serious shooting of it.
I wasn't planning on doing any shooting of it, and I really didn't. I just watched it.
But you went to Little Rock, Arkansas, right?
Yeah.
So you took a little road trip, and so you were in the path of totality, which is actually very cool. To experience.
I had not experienced a total eclipse before. Lots and lots of partial ones, but never a total one. Mm-hmm. So that was something I wanted to do, and it was neat. Unlike some people I've read about, I did not cry.
No, well, it was not. But it is an interesting experience.
It was cool, though.
Yeah, and just for clarification, I went up to Wyoming in 2017 for the total eclipse. It was much closer to home. Mm-hmm. Drove up there, hung out in a cornfield with my son, and we had the eclipse glasses and did the whole thing. So I still had solar film. I built a solar filter back then, because you can't take a picture of a partial eclipse without a filter, and no, a 10-stop ND is not enough. You need a strong filter, otherwise you risk frying your sensor. And if you're using a DSLR, you'd fry your retina. That's not a good thing to look through a telephoto lens at the sun. So I bought some solar film, and all I did was I used step up rings to create a filter. So I used that little lip and a little rubber cement, and I stuck it on there and cut out a disc and put it on and screwed that on. So I still had that left over. And so I was able to put that on my 300 millimeter OM lens, and then use a 2x teleconverter and set up in the backyard on a tripod. I honestly wasn't sure there would be much to photograph this go around, because the weather report was sketchy as to whether or not there'd be clouds. There was a lot of clouds. Fortunately, they held off here enough. There were some high clouds that just didn't impact my shooting. And that it worked. It was casual. I just went out every few minutes, took another picture. And if nothing else, it was a nice way to see the eclipse because I just flipped out the LCD on my camera. It's like, okay, here we are. There's the progress. And you could just watch. So it was a little casual thing. Now when it goes total, you actually don't need the eclipse glasses. You get that brief moment
No,
where you
no. We
and
had
that's
the
cool.
eclipse glasses and used them up to that point. And we had a really great situation in Little Rock. I was able to rent a house off of VRBO extremely inexpensively. I think it was before people figured out there was an eclipse
Yeah,
going
there you go.
on, because it was remarkably cheap. And we just were able to step outside, 10 feet from the door and watch the whole thing as
That
much
is a
as we
way to do it.
wanted. But
That's
it was neat. It was, when when you get into the totality period, the air cools off, it gets much darker, all the
It just
street lights were
feels
turning
eerie.
on, and that kind of stuff. It was neat. I'm sure that if, in the past, if people did not know an eclipse was going to happen, that it was a very, very spooky thing, say the least.
Yeah. And this was there was a lot of cool stories. The fact that we can predict these things with this level of accuracy down to the second is pretty cool. It's like being in a room where you've got the lights on a dimmer switch and you just start slowly turning that dimmer down. And then that last bit, it just goes down and it gets dark. And
Exactly.
it's like,
Yeah.
whoa, the quality of the light, you definitely notice a dimming even here where we had about a 67% eclipse,
Sure.
so 2/3. When it goes dark like that, it really is like being in blue hour. It's like being in twilight. It's wild. So just, if you've taken these photos or if you've seen these photos, there's a couple of things. How many photo, it's like you were saying to me earlier, it's like taking photos of the moon, the full moon. Well, it's nice, you can do it, but it's what makes that photo any different than anybody else's, other than being maybe higher quality because you've got a better telephoto lens or something. I've seen some really wonderful moon photos, but photographically speaking, they don't
They don't
speak
do a
to me.
thing for me. I
You know,
look at them and I go, "Oh God, another moon photo."
right.
And I love astronomy. I'll be clear, I've got two telescopes.
There you go.
This is not something I hate. It just kind of leaves me cold, but
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, what can you do if you've taken these pictures? One of the things you'll see a couple things. One is clearly where you composite stuff. And in my case, the composite is usually just a sequence of shots, going across the frame, showing various stages of the eclipse, either with or without the totality, depending on. I've done this both times, and that's where something like Photoshop is quite helpful because you just load everything into layers and rearrange them as necessary. And if you're going to do that, it's a good idea to try to make sure they're all cropped the same size and the exposures are all adjusted similarly, so you don't get weird differences across the each sun. And usually what I see with these is most people shoot, the eclipse leading up to totality, and then they may or may not shoot things on the back end. And so when you see the ones that are perfectly symmetrical, it's probably because they flipped the, their first half of their images over, and that's okay. It's fine. I mean, it's not necessarily, there's a question of whether or not you're going for astronomical accuracy versus something that's pleasing. Okay. But then we see some other things, and you just have to be aware of this. This is not a criticism. This is just an awareness thing. You might see a sequence of the eclipse over the Grand Canyon or a city skyline or whatever. Those aren't real. Okay. First of all, the sun was way higher in the sky, right? I mean, it was almost directly overhead, not quite, but it was high up there, especially this time of year. And when you're using that solar filter, You know what this, you know, anything that's not the sun is black.
Yep.
So I mean, when this, you know, so when
None
you see
blacker.
these, and I've seen people post this and who are completely transparent about it, you know, I put this over here and I wanted it to be over the skyline. So just please be aware, this is not what it was. This is not accurate in any way, but I just thought this was a pleasing shot. And there is nothing wrong with that. That is artistic interpretation and it is valid. But then I've also seen some AI generated things that are clearly fake, and those drive me nuts. But that's a different story.
One thing I will say is if you have an opportunity to see a total eclipse, and here in North America it'll be a while before there's another one, but if you have a chance to see one, it's worthwhile to see. It's fun.
Well, you know, in 2045, there's an eclipse that comes right through Colorado Springs in the past. Now, I don't know if I'll still be around. Well, hopefully I'll still be around in 20 years. I don't know if I'll still be here, but you know, it's notable. But you got to make your plans early. That's the thing. You definitely need to, because people start realizing, and if you travel somewhere for an eclipse, you know, keep in mind things can go wrong. Clouds can happen.
Oh gosh,
You
yeah.
know, so if you are going to travel somewhere for the eclipse, treat that as the bonus episode. You know, the bonus, you know, go somewhere that you can enjoy your time. And if it doesn't happen, you know, and you can't see everything, don't, you know,
And
don't
that's what
freak
we
out.
did. We had plenty of other things that we did on the trip that we had wanted to do. So if the eclipse hadn't worked out because of clouds, we wouldn't have been,
It still would have
leaping
gotten
off the
dark.
top floor of a building or anything.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah, it would have,
and
we
I
would have
feel
still had an
like
experience.
I got to have that experience in 2017. I did not feel like I needed to make a big deal of it this time. In
Sure.
fact, I wasn't even really sure I was going to take pictures until that morning, and I was looking at the, okay, the sun seems to be out. All right, I'll put the tripod out there. Why not, you know? So anyhow, that was fun. Now you told me that you recently tried out for a period of time the Nikon ZF camera.
Yeah, I got one on a loan for a couple weeks, and the reason I was curious to try it, we had both owned the ZFCs, did not end up keeping them. I know in my case, I felt the control layout and arrangement was just too awkward, especially if I was going to use some other camera and go back and forth. It was just a little bit too weird. And how it operated. It's not a retro layout by any means. It's a hybrid kind
It's a
of thing.
retro styling rather than a true retro, you know, truly retro layout of, well, the controls themselves. They look retro, they function, but they don't always function like they would because there's more electronics under the hood
Well,
and things
the
like command
simplest way
dials and stuff.
the simplest way I would just describe it, and we've talked a little bit about it in the past, is if I were comparing it to something like my old FE2 or F3 or whatever, I could look down at the camera and know what aperture it was set at. I could easily tell what shutter speed it was at or whether it was on an auto setting. And of course,
And
I
what
knew what the
ISO?
ISO setting was because I put the film in. So it was super clear. And I think there is a beauty to that layout for certain kinds of photography. It's not nostalgic for me. It has nothing to do with nostalgia. It has to do with function. And
Here's what I'll say
it's a
about it.
wonderful thing.
What you have with the, you know, manual cameras, like what I had in my EL Nikon ELT, you know, which I still have, is that you had one simple use case for setting the settings. You have a shutter speed dial, an ISO dial, and you had an aperture ring on the lens. That was what you had. There was other things you could do. You could set it to auto, aperture priority in my case, or, you know, and there was exposure compensation, you know, dial on the camera. But that was how it was set. There was no alternative pathway or use case for creating settings. And with the ZF and the ZFC, they also have under the hood the more modern settings, and they sometimes can compete with each other. You can have the camera set one way and not really, you know, what's on the dial doesn't necessarily match what the camera is set to.
No, it sometimes can be quite different. But, you know, the reason I wanted to try the ZF is I've still got a lot of old manual focus Nikon lenses, and they were not that appealing to use for me with the more modern cameras or with the little ZFC. The problems with the little ZFC, one, you know, it was the APS-C format, so it was changing the angle of view. Plus, it didn't have IBIS, which is a nice thing. And the ZF fixes both of those problems. So I thought, well, that might be kind of interesting. And it has another feature that is clever where, you know, the ZF has the full range of subject detection features that the newer Nikon cameras have, you know, the Z8 and Z9. And if you're taking photos of people, it will actually zoom in automatically on the eyes and allow you to manually focus very easily on a zoomed in image of the eyes and get quite good quite good manual focus.
That's cool.
So that's kind of a clever thing.
That is
I
nice.
Think. And so I wanted to give it a try and see what I thought. The takeaways for me, and I'll make this pretty brief. You know, the camera's new dials, which are made of brass, those feel nice. Camera overall, had a bit of a hollow feel to it to me, and it's not nearly as compact as the old F3s and FM2s or FE2s that I owned. You know, so it just felt a little bit bulkier and a little bit more awkward. I attached a grip like we talked about in the previous podcast, and that really transformed its handling. So that it felt a lot better balanced in my hands. I did use it with the manual focus lenses. It worked well. You know, the 24 megapixel sensor, like all the other 24 megapixel full frame sensors that are out there, was great. You know, produced really nice results, very good noise characteristics, no problems there. It was very good. You know, like, again,
is what you would expect from
yeah.
that. Yeah, those are good sensors. They're really
just
nice.
Period.
Yeah.
They show up in multiple cameras. The control layout, I still don't like. When I was using it just with manual focus lenses and was using the shutter speed dial and the aperture ring on the lens, that worked pretty well. And I just kept it in manual exposure because that avoided the whole issue of, you know, can you really tell what ISO is being set, or is it secretly on auto ISO setting? You know, things like that. But I don't think it's enough to make me want to have one to use with the older lenses. It's just not compelling enough. And then for the newer Z lenses, it works well. But that's where you get into the control layout thing. And I don't know how many reviews I've read of the camera where it said, well, I tried this, but what I ended up doing is resorting to the front and back command dials, which to me completely blows away the whole point of the camera.
Right. So you have this, that's why I say retro styling, because the retro isn't as functional as it ought to be. You know, I contrast it with like a Fuji X-T series camera.
Yeah.
Which does have those settings directly in there.
And it's really easy to use and really quick. To me, if that's what you want, that's the camera to get. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's the ZF is a nice camera. I think I can't quite imagine it being my main camera. I can imagine it being a second camera, you know, for Nikon owners.
Mm-hmm.
It would be awkward for a lot of subjects.
I know a lot of people who definitely like the styling, and hey, that styling is nice. I mean, that's what I grew up with using. You know, it is nice styling. I think what is compelling to a lot of people, that they, I don't know whether or not they're willing to admit this or not, but it's, It is the least expensive Nikon full frame body that has subject detection in it.
Right.
It really is. And I mean, this, and that is not a bad thing. But as we said when it was announced, if they had put these features, put those features into a Z6 III or whatever, whatever it might
Which
be.
I'm sure will happen
Yeah.
before long.
That's what I would have, as a casual all-purpose camera, that would be something I could consider. Because I think what happens sometimes is the retro dials, they don't, you end up not using them. So what's the point of having them other than they look nice? I mean,
And then you end up with a secondary problem where, because of the camera's styling, there aren't enough programmable function buttons to work well in an environment where you're using it for wildlife or things like that. For people photography, it's absolutely fine and very pleasant to use for that. But
Right.
for the
The
other
fast action
subject
sorts
types,
of things.
you really need those programmable buttons, and it just doesn't have enough. But
Okay.
it's
Well,
a
it's good to
nice
hear your
camera.
take on. Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
and yeah,
I
they
think
weren't.
if you go into it with the right expectations, you can have fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, it is
Wrong
a good camera.
expectations, you may
That's
be
just it.
frustrated.
I just think there's people who want it to be something that it isn't.
Right.
Because of its price point, because of its feature set, which
Sure.
all of those things are good things, but they come with a compromise of design. So anyway, not a bad thing, but it's good to hear your take on that. So once again, we thank all of our listeners for staying on listening this long, but we do appreciate your support over at our blog, imagedoctorsphoto.com. You can sign up there to become a supporter and get access to our exclusive blog articles, bonus video episodes, and more, including feedback from us on your photos. So, thanks again for listening. And until next time, happy shooting.
All right, bye-bye.